Hello again and welcome to I've Got a Beatles Podcast with Dave and Chris. And how fortuitous that we are recording on Paul McCartney's 75th birthday today, June 18th. So, as we just heard, Paul McCartney playing the piano and leading the boys through an early take of Penny Lane from the new Sgt. Pepper box set. And I don't know, I'm very excited to talk about this today because it's been about... It's been Pepper Month here, Pepper Year. And so we finally got our deluxe sets a couple weeks ago and are ready to dig in.
Yeah, you know, with all of these, which we've talked about many times, these Paul releases, neither of us have ever bought any of the deluxe sets.
No.
The day this was announced, I think both of us put our pre-orders
yep,
in.
Yep. There's something different about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So when mine came, I was like thrilled. I was about to leave town too, but I was like, "Whoa! I gotta check this out." So I opened it up, and of course, you've got the shiny cover.
Is that lenticular? I think is the name for the kind that reflects when you.
Yes.
Yeah, lenticular cover, which is very cool. I, you know, like you were saying about the McCartney sets, I think they probably have a lot of nice things in them, but they're, you know, it's just not the same. This album and its place in music history, Beatles history, it deserves the kind of super deluxe treatment, and I'm sure you would agree, but they didn't leave any stone unturned here. This is a terrific set, and with just the packaging, the photos, the music, everything in it, it's just such a great package.
Yeah, you get two posters,
right?
Plus a card for so that you can cut out your mustache to wear
yes.
around,
or your badge, yeah.
and your badge. but I think the real and of course the four discs.
Yes.
So we get four discs. We'll go into detail about the discs here in a bit. Also, a Blu-ray and a DVD, which basically cover the same. Ground, depending on if you've got a Blu-ray player or a DVD player. But I just absolutely adore this book.
The book that comes with it is beautiful.
It's
yeah, many of the photos I've never seen. And just the very colorful, good essays. What were some of your thoughts?
Well, I love the essays, and I haven't read them all just because it's so thick. But each of them, I think, like gives you a different perspective on sort of the like one of the sections is called The World in 1967. And they could just go to detail and really give you a wide swath of like exactly what was happening at the time.
Yeah.
Connecting 66 to 68 when everything would get a little more chaotic in the world. So I thought that was great. The Sgt. Pepper's Musical Revolution section is fantastic.
Yes. Yes.
Very detailed about the recording. But nothing's better to me than the songs and recording details.
Yes. Like Kevin Howlett, I believe. Who?
Yes.
Yeah, who wrote a great book on the Beatles and the BBC sessions, too. So he's a real authority on the recording sessions.
Yeah, I just think like each of these, and you get your lyric sheet,
mm-hmm.
you get song details, recording details for each of these tracks. Some of the bigger tracks like In the Life Of.
Yeah.
two pages of recording details and a picture. You can even see like where they're like drawings of where they're at in the studio and all kinds of things like that. And of course the pictures. It's just like the book alone is just like, oh man, this is hours and hours and hours of going
details.
Into detail about stuff, and you can you know, of course, they also have a whole thing about the cover and tells you every person on the cover and everything like that. So,
yeah, just beautifully done. And it's the kind of thing, Beatle fans, we like to complain a lot about what we're not getting. And, don't we? I mean, it seems like that's a pretty common experience for Beatle fans. It's like, well, we got this, but we didn't get that. Or why'd they leave this track off? Or why'd they not give us any book or anything? And I really... think I can say that they gave everything that a Sgt. Pepper fan would want, from essays by great people to the photos to all the detail. et cetera, et cetera, let alone all the music that's included.
You also get on the DVD and Blu-ray the videos, so three videos, and those are all great. It's A Day in the Life, and Strawberry Penny Fields, Lane. And Penny Lane. Those all look great. Never have looked better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you also get the Sgt. Pepper special from 25 years ago now.
Yes.
Because the first thing he says in the special is, this was 25 years ago. So it's like really precisely dates that special.
Yeah.
The special's a little strange because it feels like short.
Me too. It was like very short. I mean, it's cool because it's sort of hosted by George Martin in a way. It's a lot of the clips, if you've seen him sitting at the console recording desk, and it's him playing back and forth with the faders. But you have interviews with George and Paul and Ringo because they were still there, and then isn't Phil Collins? He's in there. And
yeah, Phil some Collins other... shows up. It's like why Phil Collins?
Yeah. Sure. But it feels very short. Yeah, it's like about 40 minutes, I think. Very brief.
Also, doesn't Ringo just come off as real cranky?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I had to sit around all the time.
Played chess.
Playing chess.
Yeah, he does. Whereas Paul was like, oh, yeah, I had this great idea, Sgt. Pepper. And yeah. It's historic for what it is, and the fact that when George Martin's sitting there, you can... hear all sorts of different things that you wouldn't hear normally. So that's neat to have.
Yeah. Like when he's playing the four French horns.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's a pretty great little segment where he pots that up. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's definitely worth a look. But of course, this book, it had so many sections and so many different angles of ways to rethink about Sgt. Pepper. And of course, you were at the conference recently.
Yes. Yeah.
Where you got a lot of that firsthand and did a little of that yourself.
Indeed. Yeah. So a lot of you already saw a message about it and probably listened to my little interview with a couple of the presenters at the conference at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. It was pretty fun. It was a academic conference about 4 days long. Of nothing but Sgt. Pepper, and like you said, from all different angles. So we had music theorists like myself, we had musicologists, we had English professors, independent scholars, all sorts of people that really took this album apart. And some of the highlights for me, writer Tim Riley, who wrote an important book on the Beatles, Tell Me Why, I thought gave a very, very good talk. Some good theory presentations. There was an Indian music, we had a lunch, and a new professor at the University of Michigan is a scholar of Indian music, and he had a group, and they played Within You, Without You, and talked about it, and how George's knowledge of Indian music had really increased by that point, and it was fascinatingly done. Other great people, Walt Everett is always good, Kit O'Toole, friend of the show, Kit. Which you saw a little bit of her presentation on music hall influences was a real hit. I mean, that was a...
I hadn't even really thought about that at all. And it really, like, not just informed how you feel about Sgt. Pepper, but informed how I feel about Ringo's whole career.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, he's just doing that now in his live concerts. He's like... sort of keeping that sort of fun thing alive from back in the old timey days. So
absolutely, it was very much a nice presentation and really tied together a lot of different facets of the Beatles' work. And then
I also caught a friend of the show, Catherine Cox's presentation. I thought that was really good about brass instruments and their use in Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and that. Kind of relates a little bit. My own talk, which some of you saw, and thanks for watching. My own talk was about how classical instruments on Sgt. Pepper took a more prominent role in classical music influences, and then people in the classical music world and establishment like Leonard Bernstein and others really started to pay attention to the Beatles after that album, because I think they saw a fusion of a lot of different styles and techniques that hadn't been done in pop music. So It was a lot of fun to research and talk about it, and we watched a funny clip of Leonard Bernstein talking about pop music and analyzing the Beatles in 1967 right before Sgt. Pepper, and it got a good laugh, so it's pretty interesting. But the funny thing from the conference, though, so obviously we're talking about one album, so some of the songs were heard a lot. And in particular, we got very tired. It became a running joke. Every time someone was going to play A Day in the Life, they'd preface it and say, okay, I know we've heard this about 10 times at the conference so far, but I'm going to play a little of A Day in the Life. So that one was done a lot. And then Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite was also, it was very cool. It was analyzed in a couple different ways. One guy was an English professor, and you know the old story about Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite is John got all the words from the poster that's included in your Super Deluxe box set. Yeah. But that's actually not true. This English professor went through the whole song with the lyrics of the song and then compared it to the poster. And John actually added and tweaked a lot more than you think.
So yeah.
That's again, one of those overgeneralizations or simplifying how John actually did it. So
wow.
That was pretty interesting. And then there was a provocative presentation by a friend of the show, Aaron Kadovich, who did a talk on why Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite is the Beatles' most underrated song.
Oh.
Yeah. And that got a lot of discussion. And all in all, it was really well done and lots of interesting talks and interesting people.
So, of course, the set had been released at that point, right?
Yeah, it was on June 1st, which was the UK release date of Sgt. Pepper and 50 years ago. And the conference started on June 1st, but the box set came out a couple days before that. So I had my copy like you. I was going out of town to that conference, so I quickly burned it to my computer so I could listen on the way. And they did have an actual full session at the end of one of the nights. They listened to the new stereo remix by Giles Martin. I didn't go to that because I'd already heard it. But it's a
what
good
was
time
the
to...
reaction just from people at the conference?
I'd say mixed overall. I think
really,
yeah. I think some people, and this is actually probably a good segue to get into the big grab about this box set here is the 2017 stereo remixing of the album by Giles Martin. And I think some people were really impressed, and the fact that they said something that I would agree with, that it brings out a lot more of Paul and Ringo. You hear the drums in a much crisper, tighter way, as well as the bass really thumps through the texture. Some people were saying that that overcompensated, and then you couldn't hear the vocals as well. Maybe it's song by song. I don't know. It depends. But I think most people said that it is really very well done, and it's not the new album. It's a Giles Martin's performance of it in a way. It's not going to replace the mono or the original albums. But it's really neat to hear a lot of things that you couldn't hear before.
Well, there was a really great interview on NPR with Giles Martin, and one thing he said is like, it's not like I'm going and destroying the old.
Right. Exactly.
You could still, if you're so prickly that you want to listen to the old old stereo, which I personally just feel is like extraordinarily inferior to this version.
I would agree.
It's still there. In fact, we're going to play a clip or two from it here in just a moment. I liked in that interview and in other interviews I've heard from him how he explained that he did this, which is that you can now go back to the original the first generation of tapes where they recorded the drums and the bass, that they would have to bounce to the one track in order to use, because they only had four tracks at the time.
Yeah.
So now they're mixing off. They're able to, you know, give us a full channel of bass that they can manipulate.
And yeah, when you, in the original way, when you would do that, you'd bounce the tracks, you'd lose sound quality, and it would not sound quite as good. So now the fact, like, now you can put everything on an individual track, it's going to sound better.
Yes. Plus, those tapes were only used the one time. Mm-hmm. So he says, a quote here from, this is from the NPR page, and he says, the tapes are glistening. What was recorded in 67 sounds pure and crystal clear. There's not any hiss or anything.
Wow.
So it's great because you've got that. Not only do you have these in perfect mint tapes, mm-hmm. but you've got technology that's 50 years better in yeah. order to capture that and press it to the vinyl and create these stereo mixes. Of course, you know, he also has stuff that he's been coming up with for the last few years where, right. you know, he can separate things and take the Cheers out of the set he did last year, which we talked about from yeah. the Hollywood Bowl. So using that technology, he's able to yeah. do some additional separation. So I just think personally, I don't know how you feel about these stereo mixes. Well, I think I do. It's spectacular.
Yeah, it was great. I've not listened under headphones. I think that's probably the way to do it. But I will say I heard a lot of things that I've not heard or were not as prominent, and it's a good balance. I think I saw one writer said that it was kind of like Giles was trying to make the mono mix a stereo mix, which was because the mono mix was the official one that the Beatles worked on, and he wanted to take that concept and just broaden it to stereo. And if that was the case, it's really well done, and I like it. I didn't notice a whole lot of difference the first time I listened because I was sort of half listening, but then yeah. once I really listened, you could hear that, especially the bass and drums.
Well, I thought it'd be good to go just briefly, track by track, just briefly. I mean, we did a whole episode on this. If you want a deep dive on each track, please go back to episode 50. And that was a deep dive on this and the lyrics and all that kind of stuff. But I thought we'd go through the stereo remaster and just talk about just a little bit of what stood out. Sgt. Pepper, the first track, it just sounds a lot harder rock to me. And the drums are, obviously the big thing is, in the original, is you can't hear the drums as much as here. They're just like very present. The
yes.
drums. With a little help from our friends, the bass just really stands out in this version. Also, the ride cymbal during the "Would You Believe in a Love at First Sight" that sort of ride cymbal is just sounds crazy, crazy, crazy good. So the third track, just to give you an audio example here, I thought it'd be interesting to play "Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds," the stereo, original stereo, and then we'll play a little bit of the new version.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Cellophane flowers of yellow and green, towering over your head. Look for the girl with the sun in her eyes, and she's gone. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes. Flowers of yellow and green, towering over.
Well, the sound effects or the kind of swooshing is so much more prominent and gives it a different atmosphere.
It's a lot more psychedelic.
Yeah, very trippy. Really. Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was important that, you know, back when they recorded the stereo, they would just have some other engineer do it, and the Beatles weren't involved in it. But they had these meticulous notes that they did on the mono mixes, and Giles Martin said he used those. So it's like, he really wanted to make it the way that
authentic.
Beatles did.
Yeah.
Yeah, authentic. And I think maybe if it's any other person doing this remix, then people might call blasphemy.
How about Jeff Lynne?
Jeff.
What if Jeff Lynne did this mix?
Can we? His drums are too. Let's put some. Put gate up these drums. Really hardcore.
Could we bring in an orchestra to?
Yeah, let's get us the third orchestra. Yeah. Getting better. The guitars were like real buried in the previous mix.
And, yeah.
And they stand out pretty good here, I think.
That's something I was going to say as a generally. I've talked about the bass and the drums, but the guitar solos in a lot of the songs, like in Sgt. Pepper and Fixing a Hole, Getting Better, they just sound a lot more present and crisp, I would say.
Yeah, and the backup vocals, too.
Yeah.
Fixing a Hole, particularly the backup vocals, are crazy great in this new version.
At this conference, there were many people who said Fixing a Hole they thought was the worst song on Sgt. Pepper, but I want to say it's one of my favorite songs, and I've always liked it. It's very un-Paul-like in some ways, and I think in the alternate take, you hear the harpsichord being played by Paul in different ways, and I think it's a pretty underrated tune myself, so I'll just lay that out there, and this version sounds great.
Yeah, it never sounded better.
Yeah.
She's Leaving Home, obviously it's these strings, it's just thrilling to hear these strings, like now going back to that previous generation of tape again, it's just like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And of course they're using the slightly faster mono version in the stereo field, and of course John just sounds splendid in what was wrong. It's just crystal clear. Mr. Kite, you know, it's like hard to name one thing. It's just but I would say just the whirly bits at the end.
The whirly bits
are pretty great. Within You, Without You, we didn't even play Within You, Without You first time we talked about this. And the instruments really stick out, particularly about three quarters of the way through the song, right before the vocal comes back in. There's that boom, dun, 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 thing that you hear that almost is not heard in the original stereo. And it just really stands out great. The PBS special, I don't know if you saw this PBS special.
With Howard Goodall?
Howard Goodall. Which I thought mostly was kind of so-so of a special. But I did like the part where they had the vocal.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about George's vocal being not really exactly how you'd have it as an Indian music vocal.
Correct.
And so they brought in a classical Indian music guy to sing what it would sound like if an Indian classical music performer was playing it. So I thought that was really great. I never really considered that it was not just George trying to do Indian music in a rock format, but creating a new thing, combining Indian music. So I thought that was probably the highlight of a kind of mediocre special.
Yeah.
Consistently interrupted with begging for money.
Unfortunately, I missed that.
not to rip on PBS too much.
No, another thing that the conference was very thought provoking, but there was a lot of discussion about irony too in the Beatles, and it's always bothered me that laughing at the end of Within You, Without You, and it's more prominent, I think, in the remix. It's basically like saying this is a very serious song all the way through it, and no, we're just kidding. It's actually not. We're just kind of making fun of it. I don't know. What do you think of that laughter? Because we didn't really talk about that very much.
I've always just thought of it sort of as a... Like Pink Floyd a lot of times has a lot of like extra little stuff that's in their songs that's like a little radio a bit that's coming through, or the guy is saying absolutely blah 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 in the background or whatever. I just always thought of it as sort of like a audio painting kind of thing. It's never really bothered me, but I get your point here. It's sort of, does it take the piss out of the song? Does it, is it doing that, you know?
Yeah.
And if so, then maybe I don't like it.
Right. And some people pointed out other instances of that same thing happening on the album and actually in the Beatles' career, how they would do a serious thing and then joke about it. And like, we're not taking ourselves too seriously, but I don't know. It was thought.
Is it the equivalent of You Can Count Me Out In, where they're just trying to have it both ways?
Right. Yeah. Like you're not committing. Right. Exactly. So is George serious about this? It's obviously a beautiful song, and many people have quoted the lyrics as, you know, some of George's finest and use it as a way to live. But then it's kind of hurt at the end to me by just this goofy laughter. I don't know.
I also wonder if their thinking behind it was like, well, let's just remind, because you're going to hear the audience again at the end. And we heard the audience at the beginning. There's a thing in comedy where if you have a show that has an intermission, that you come back with something intriguing, but sort of just reminding the audience of your themes.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be something like that. Like they're like, oh, we better put a little audience back in here just to remember the audience is there watching along with as Kit was talking about the sing along kind of group dynamic where the audience matters too. So it could be that.
I like that tick. Well, it's followed up by When I'm 64, and does that sound too much different to you?
Well, there's this great little moment where I think it's just a very slight adjustment where we shall scrimp and save, and the background vocals are like, and you used to hear, and then the clarinet more so than the vocals. And now I feel like they brought the clarinet down just slightly, and they brought those vocals up just slightly, and now it is perfectly in sync.
I'll have to check that out.
Perfect to me. So that's that's the moment that really kind of stood out to me When I'm 64. Lovely Rita, once again, the background of vocals right after sitting on a sofa with the sister or two.
Yeah.
They go, oh, it's so great.
It's great, yeah. And the piano is really, the boogie-woogie kind of piano is brought out a lot more, I think, in this version.
I thought we'd play Good Morning, Good Morning, because this is another one just think that it's such a stark contrast. And particularly, I think you're going to want to listen to the drums. I think you can't help but listen to the drums. In these two versions. So here's Good Morning, Good Morning, the original, and then we'll play the new Giles Martin stereo mix.
To do to save his life, call his wife in. Nothing to say, but what a day. How's your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Going to work, don't want. Save his life, call his wife in. Nothing to say.
your boy been? Nothing to do, it's up to you. I've got nothing to say, but it's okay.
Ringo's drums almost sound like machine gun fire. It's like so in your head, in your face, and staccato, and yeah. I mean, you can't, like you said, you can't help but pay attention to that.
Maybe the people that were complaining about the vocals were it was maybe this track. It's just like a stampede, which is funny because all the animal sounds towards the end of drums. It's just like really, really, really present. But I love it. It's just like, oh man, this is Good Morning, Good Morning. It never really had a a song of, oh, that's a really hard rock song with a big kick to it, until now.
Yeah, and the guitar solo too, and that is really great and really brought out. One of the complaints also that somebody said was, well, it sounds like typical remastering where they just boost the volume and it sounds very compressed and loud. And how do you respond to somebody who says, oh, it just sounds louder?
That's a lot of complaints. Some people can't be happy with anything.
No.
It's like, just listen to the old one then. Quit whining.
Yeah, we're not getting rid of it, like you said.
why didn't that complainer go remix it himself?
Yeah, right. Yes, very well said. So, but yeah, I would agree that "Good Morning, Good Morning" becomes almost a standout track. And much more fun to listen to.
I also just love the Sergeant Pepper reprise. Of course, you get the Paul's sort of blathering at the end. Like,
Yeah.
And then a day in the life, it's hard to even pick out anything. I mean, it's just such, the whole thing just sounds like so great.
The great production. Yeah.
You can hear a little more presently the counting.
Yes.
Obviously. Yeah. And John's vocal mix with the orchestra. Mm-hmm. I think the levels are just a little bit more perfect to me. I took notes through listening 4, 5, 6 times to this thing, and those were my notes on that.
Well, it's nice to go back to this because I could not listen to Sgt. Pepper for a little while after the conference. I was kind of sick of it, so it's nice to go back and hear it again with fresh ears. But part of the fresh ears comes from these two discs of, in the deluxe set, these two discs of 2.5, if you want to count disc 4, of the alternate takes and other versions. So now you want to talk about the 2-disc version a little bit?
I really think that they did a good job of picking the gems from the second and third discs and putting them on the 2-disc. There are a couple places. Of course, we're going to be talking about this hum.
Yeah. The hyped hum.
Here in a moment. But where they added something to the 2-disc that isn't on the 4-disc. So they added this hum to the end of the one track. But I think they just did a terrific job of taking what they could and making a good package that fans would like of a 2-disc. Do you feel the same way?
I do. I think, they picked a lot of the... Well, so the thing is, there were some tracks already released on Beatles Anthology, and so they had to make a decision which ones there are some that are repeats, correct?
I think so. The book does a good job of telling you what tracks, why they're highlighting these tracks on the 4-disc, and also mentioning Beatles Anthology and what was on that.
Right.
And maybe what the difference was, or telling you that, like, for instance, the Penny Lane remaster is not freshly done. It's from the 2015 Beatles 1 set, et cetera, et cetera. So I think they do a good job of it.
They do. And what's really neat, I think, about the way they sequence the tracks is it's done in the same order that the Beatles recorded the album. So the first song recorded for, well, they didn't know it at the time, but their new album of Sgt. Pepper was actually Strawberry Fields. And so that's the first, you get five versions of that.
yeah. Five too. Great versions too.
Yeah.
Every single one of them is worth a listen.
And you wanted to play one of them.
Yeah. I thought we'd play something that's not on the two disc. It's Strawberry Fields Take One, which has always been one of my favorites from bootlegs in the past. And the levels here are so good. It, before the guitar coming in was just like shrill as could be. but now it just sounds too fantastic. So let's take a listen to Strawberry Fields Forever Take One.
Take one.
Living is easy with eyes closed, misunderstanding all you see. It's getting hard to be someone, but it all works out. It doesn't matter much to me. No one I think is in my tree. I mean, it must be high or low. That is, you can't, you know, tune in, but it's all right. That is, I think it's not too bad. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields Forever.
Hey, Kwan. Dude.
Yeah,
it's like if they would have released that like immediately after recording it, everybody'd be like, "Oh, this is such a great song," you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sounds so beautiful.
Yeah.
But John's maniacal reworking, and you know, this is probably the best example of like the fact that they could take the time
mm-hmm.
to like, well, you know what? Let's try it again and make it a little better. And like John's like, hey, you know what? I want to try it yet again. It needs more punch. So let's bring in horns and stuff. So
the book says that it took 55 hours to record all of Strawberry Fields from start to finish. So that's amazing and quite a production. So you get a bunch of takes of it, and then you get the stereo mix from 2015. And then next up in the recording was When I'm 64. You get one take of that. And then you
That's pretty great too. Paul on the piano and his vocal and the drums and everything is pretty good.
And what it seems typical of McCartney that compared to Lennon, that most McCartney tunes already come into the studio pretty well formulated. He's not really starting from scratch too often. So that it almost sounds a lot like the finished version. And then you've got several takes of Penny Lane. Including the one we heard at the beginning of the episode today. And then, I don't know if you have anything to say about the Penny Lane.
It's fun to hear. I mean, usually instrumentals you kind of skip past, but that one's kind of fun to hear and sounds really great. And then the vocal overdubs is fun to hear, too. They're just kind of like talking it through, and it's really like a glimpse of them working at
Right. Yeah. That's really interesting. And then you get the famous cuts of A Day in the Life, including the orchestral overdub, which I used in my presentation, which is just you hear the real track faintly in the background, but it's really emphasizing the orchestra, which is very spooky sounding. And then, of course, the famous hyped hum ending instead of the big piano chord. We have to talk about this.
Yeah, this is crazy. Let's play a little bit of them. This is track 13 on the disc, and this is them attempting the hummed last chord a few times.
One, two, three, four.
Eight.
Take nine.
Yeah, right.
Okay, I think we're ready to do it.
Take 9.
Okay.
Isn't that it? All right.
Ready now, you're not
doing it. Check the note.
Stop freaking out, Mrs.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh yeah, I guess that was a decent idea in theory. Real dumb idea. It just doesn't have the punch of the. I mean, the fact that they recognized, you know what, this idea doesn't work.
Yeah.
Let's try the piano thing, and then that they come up with such a brilliant piano thing where they can hold that sustain about 5 times longer than.
Yeah.
You regularly get is just, I mean, a testament to their brilliant. Just kind of keep working at something until it's great.
I think it was funny in the, I believe it was the Rolling Stone review said, this idea just wasn't going to work because all the Beatles were smokers and couldn't hold their breath for, couldn't hold that tone for very long. So you can hear them kind of fading out after a couple seconds.
Oh.
So, yeah, so really, it just didn't
really
work.
Dumb.
Yeah. But kind of a curious, it's sort of interesting just to hear it. And then you've got some Sergeant Pepper takes.
Yeah, we'll go out with the end of take 9 is really great. This is how they start the 2-disc.
Yes.
And it's really fun hearing Paul just kind of goofing around at the end of that Sergeant Pepper. And you get a little note from George Harrison, which somebody pointed out. It's like, see, George was invested and still working because he's like giving some advice on the track.
Yeah.
I also like in the book actually get Paul's Jimi Hendrix story. So it's almost like we're watching a Paul.
Like we're watching him live. Who likes Jimi Hendrix?
And then what's after that?
So then we have a couple of Good Morning, Good Morning takes. So the instrumental version and then take 8. And then on to set.
That one's also on the 2-disc.
That's on the 2-disc as well. Then you go to CD 3, which has 2 versions of Fixing a Hole, take 1, and then some talking. So you hear Paul playing the harpsichord, which George Martin actually plays the harpsichord on the real finish song. So Paul's hamming it up on the harpsichord, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. And take 2 there, which is also on the 2-disc, you get a lot of Ringo there. It's just really, you can really hear Ringo.
Yes, exactly. And then you have 2 versions of Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, I believe.
For the Benefit of Mr. Kite!
Which I believe was on the anthology, that one. Yeah, John's intro there. Lovely Rita has some talking and then take 5, or take 9. You got a couple of Lucy in the Sky versions. You have take 1 and talking, then a false start and take 5. Which
those sound good.
Yeah, they do. It's where they don't sing the chorus. You just hear the instrumental version, no vocals. Take 1 of Getting Better, and then take 12 of Getting Better. And then we flip over the album to Within You, Without You, and you get 2 versions, and we're going to play 1 of them. If you remember on Anthology, although maybe you didn't because you didn't listen to it, but there was an instrumental version of Within You, Without You, but you really just heard the Western instruments, the cellos and violas. But here it's flipped, so you get the Indian instruments only.
Yeah, and you get in the longer take that's also on the 2-disc, you get George chiming in a little bit. You also have the middle section is at the end of the track,
yeah.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
But George especially is coaching... In this track we'll play from the 4-disc here, it doesn't have a take name. It just says George coaching the musicians.
Yes.
So let's hear a little of this.
Oh,
it's even wrong here. Dharma Pani Nidagapa Repamaga Dharma Pani Nidagapa Repamaga Dharma Paga Dharma Dapana Dharma Pani Sakasani Pama.
I think I prolong too much over here, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. See, and he sings the as we found out at the conference, George sings some of the Indian syllable names to go along with the notes. So he really knew his stuff, and.
Yeah,
he really had a conception in mind.
Yeah, one thing you know about George Harrison is he's into Indian music, but yeah. to the extent of just the madness.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah.
So, but I just found that fascinating. It's like he was so totally in control of his idea at this point, and that's it's probably. I mean, it really is the. Moment probably where, you know, he's gone off to India. He said even in this book, there's mention of he's already like come back and he's not as into the
he's
Beatles.
Checked out already. Yeah.
But when he gets to do his thing, he's like totally in control now.
Yeah.
Whereas before, I think he was, you know, just one of the guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. That's very true.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are very, very interesting. You know, then you get a couple of instrumental versions of just the strings, the string Nanette and the harp on She's Leaving Home, which are not that different, except they have some neat little, you can hear the inner workings of the scoring. And then there's a little lick that we'll play you in a moment that's not on the actual release song. And then it finishes with another instrumental version of With a Little Help from My Friends, which is very not much different. And then the third disc ends with Sgt. Pepper Reprise, and it's Speech and Take 8. And I know you wanted to play this one.
Yeah, let's have a little listen to that.
Yeah, I know, yeah. It's Ringo. It's because you're listening to me singing. I'll stop singing, man. You know. Okay. Bam, 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 bam. One, two, three, four. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Hope you have enjoyed our show. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band. Sit back and let the evening go. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band. Hey, Lonely Heart Club Band, we hope you all enjoy the show. Hey, hey, hey. Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Heart Club Band. Sit back and let the evening go.
Some great Paul histrionics there. That was a great ow.
Yeah. Ow. Oh, so yeah. Great.
Oh yeah.
So great. Well, I you know, all of those I think they did a great job giving us two discs not like four discs with yeah. every take, not 10 to, you know, your Bob Dylan set where you get every single take ever of everything he's ever done on some of these releases,
which is you know, I guess great if you're for completists or things, but it's kind of boring to listen to. Like, how often are yeah. you going to listen to 20 takes of Like a Rolling Stone?
Yeah, all back to back to back,
back to back. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, what I like about this is they give us the two discs, they give us stuff in chronological order, but yeah. you also get that second disc, which you can always listen to, particularly if you have streaming service,
mm-hmm.
that they've sequenced it not in order and,
yeah.
and tried to put things in an order that they're interesting to listen to.
Right.
So I think they just did a fantastic job with the whole thing.
Yeah.
If you ask
yeah,
me.
Absolutely. And so then the fourth disc that you get in the super deluxe version is, gives you the mono album, which has already been available for a while.
Yeah.
And then some bonus tracks, also some are familiar. We have the Strawberry Fields, Penny Lane, original mono mixes. You have the first mono mix of A Day in the Life, Lucy, original mono mix. She's Leaving Home, first mono mix, and Penny Lane, which is kind of a goof because it's
a bad sound.
Very bad quality. Dang. Yeah, it's taken from a 45, it sounds like. It was the promo for Capitol Records.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and all it is it has a little funky
trumpet
lick at the end. It's yeah. like I would have almost left that off of this if you ask me.
Yeah, if that was found on the Rarities collection back in early 80s, you could get that version with the extra trumpet lick. But yep. yeah, I don't know, it's not that exciting.
I wanted to play She's Leaving Home, this first mono mix, because particularly you get that what you were talking about before with a little bit of extra. So let's hear She's Leaving Home, first mono mix.
Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock as the day begins, silently closing her bedroom door, she hoped would say more. She goes downstairs to the kitchen, clutching a handkerchief. Quietly turning the back door key, stepping outside, she is free. We gave her most of our lives. Of our lives, we gave her everything money could buy. She's leaving home after living alone for so many years. Father snores as his wife gets into a dressing gown.
What do you think of that little extra cello lick there?
I like it. It's just because I've heard it the other way for so long, it's just kind of neat to hear things that are just slightly different.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So.
Yeah, and then, so that concludes the four audio discs that you get, and then you have the, on the Blu-ray DVD disc, you get a 5.1 mix and a surround sound, and this is way out of my area of expertise, so you have some expert opinion here.
Well, you know, I asked because neither of us got the vinyl,
right?
So there's a vinyl expert in our midst, which is Sam, our friend of the show, Sam, and
yes.
So I would just ask him if he got the vinyl. And he's like, oh, yes, I ended up getting the vinyl.
Of course.
Of course. And also the CD, Blu-ray, DVD set. He says he thinks the LPs sound great, but I'm somewhat spoiled by the 5.1 mixes on the Blu-ray, which, in my opinion, are the best sounding of the remixes. Listening to them is a more immersive experience, and a few songs such as Within You, Without You sound especially stunning in that format. So. So I don't really have that great of a setup here for 5.1. I did give it a a listen, but it's just my, I got to get a better stereo setup
here. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. But again, that's the thing. It's like they didn't leave anything off as far as I'm concerned here. You really have, for the audiophiles, for the casual fan, you can get the different, the two disc. There's even the one disc if you just want the remix. So, you know, there's something for everybody here. And for us, we love all the extras. And I think it's just so well done and so fresh sounding.
It's a almost perfect release, if you ask me. It's like a 10.
Yeah.
I mean, the album, we know the album's a 10.
Yeah.
But they could have screwed it up. They didn't.
No.
They did a fantastic, wonderful job.
There's no lithographs, though.
No lithographs. Complainers are probably like, no lithographs. To the vocals, I can't even hear the vocals.
Yeah, but
well, that brings up a question, Dave, which is, what's next?
Well, I think we mentioned this before, but Giles, in the promotional interviews for this set, was asked, "Oh, so what's happening next? Is this going to happen for future albums?" And he let something slip about the White Album. You know, maybe this is going to be the same kind of treatment, but then he kind of backstepped it or then said, "Well, no, I just meant that it'll be remastered or something."
It's a more difficult task.
Yes,
and he said that was when the band became properly indulgent. There are so many takes of Sexy Sadie, for instance.
Yeah,
they officially went out the window. There's a lot of stuff, so it's getting the balance right. But I think two things: one, the success of this. This thing's been a blockbuster hit.
Surprisingly, in a way, because we always heard, well, CDs are dead. No one's going to pay 100 and whatever, 120, 150 bucks for this. And yet, yeah, it's like the number one, almost, well, it's an Amazon huge seller.
Yeah.
So people do want to buy stuff like this.
And I just think the White Album's got... First off, if you've heard the, I mean, I've talked about this a couple times on the podcast, a mono White Album, release that came out a couple years ago on vinyl is just,
which is great,
amazing,
absolutely
amazing. So to do a new stereo master, kind of based off of that master, would be great if that's all they do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then you've got all the 99 takes of Not Guilty, which didn't even make the album.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all this other stuff.
The 27-minute Helter Skelter.
And I'm sure the Piggy stuff and all that stuff is going to sound great, the instrumental versions of those.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to predict that he's going to go full kind of six disc.
Ooh.
5-6 disc, like, really hit us over the head with it on the White Album, and I hope it happens.
Okay, well, we'll make our predictions now. I'm going to predict that they won't do anything for it. I'm going to say, because Sgt. Pepper is a phenomenon, or was a phenomenon, that as the book, Chris is shaking his head.
No way.
That the book explains really well. It was very much a product of its time. And kind of defined its time in the Summer of Love, even though it wasn't really the catalyst for the Summer of Love, but was a big part of it. And it was the zeitgeist. I think, so I'm going to say that I'll predict that they probably won't do anything for the White Album. Certainly not to this extent. If there was anything, I would hope that the Escher demos came out properly. We got a couple of those on the anthology. We have bootlegs of them, but to actually kind of clean things up, that's if they do anything, my prediction is that will come out. But I don't think they're going to give it the same treatment.
So we're not going to get a Not Guilty, like a great take of Not Guilty. We're not going to get a great take, a sexy Sadie. All that stuff just going to remain in the vaults.
I think it will. I think
With Giles Martin with absolutely nothing else to do with his life than to go through old Beatles stuff and give us new releases of it. Well, that's got to happen.
Does that mean they're going to then do it for, well, then the next year it's going to be Abbey Road, and then they have to do...
Why not?
Well, then what are we going to... We'll go back and we'll have a whole session of Beatles for Sale. stuff or help.
Well, some of the
help.
Older stuff there might not be very much in the vault at all.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't already come out, and B, there might not be the necessity for like how are you going to do a new stereo remix of Please Please Me?
Right. Yeah.
When they released the stereo versions, it was just like two channels. And yeah. It was just like
vocals in one and instruments in the other. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, give me the mono. I don't care.
Oh yeah.
But you know, so were they to do a release like that, they might do it something, a package where they like,
give you
Please Please Me in with the Beatles
sort of highlights. Yeah.
And a third disc of a couple outtakes and, you know,
that
kind of thing.
That would make some sense. It never fails to surprise me, though, the appetite that we have for buying the same music over and over again. And in a way, this is different. So this is it's just not just the remasters or kind of new packaging or something else. This is really for the fans.
Or fly on the wall disc.
Or fly.
I've listened to once and throw it away.
It's actually used as a coaster for. Yeah, exactly. Like that was useless. So I hope I'm wrong on my prediction, but because I would love a super deluxe white album, but it's just so, like Giles said, it's so overwhelming. There's just so much, and it's huge with 30 tracks just on the regular album.
I'm just like, I'll finish with this. Who doesn't want it?
Well, that's I don't know.
We all want it.
Yep.
Giles Martin wants to still have a career.
Yeah.
Everyone wants it. A couple of your naysayers who don't want to ever hear anything but the old, as if the stereo versions of the old things are like the gold standard or something. Aren't.
Yeah.
Which we just know they aren't. It's the mono versions.
Right.
So to hear these new stereo versions would be great. Hopefully we get them.
And
to whatever extent we get them, great.
Yeah.
If it's they only give us two discs, fine.
Yeah,
I prefer a bunch of. This is such a treasure trove of outtakes that we just got. It's hard to imagine that they're just going to turn the crank off at this point.
So Giles, if you're listening, Chris wants all the takes of Wild Honey Pie that you can find. Every alternate version possible. That'd be great. But job well done to Apple and Giles Martin and everyone involved in this box set, because it is really great, and it's something that's going to reward repeated study too. It's not something you listen to once and then just put away. Like you said, I'm not even finished with the book yet either. I'm about halfway through, and still enjoying it and thinking and exploring more. So,
yeah, just well done. Thumbs way up.
Yeah,
go if you don't have it and you listen to this podcast on a regular basis and you get the money together, go get it. You're gonna buy it as a gift for your parents if they like the Beatles. I mean, it's a real treat. It's treasure. We're gonna go out with the real fun take here of Sergeant Pepper, some really funny stuff at the end
by the birthday boy.
By the birthday boy, Paul McCartney. And we'll be back. Of course, you know, we got our Facebook page. I got a Beatles on Twitter.
Email at ivegotabeatlespodcast@hotmail.com.
So here it is. Sergeant Pepper, Lonely Hearts Club Band.
One, two, three, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. I think it'll probably be another day singing it.
Yeah, I just heard it then. That was nice.
Yeah, and what you could do with the bits where you can't get it because you haven't got enough breath, you can just stop.
Just take over, yeah.